With that, I'm going to introduce Dr. Brooke Buckley. She had a program at Anne Arundel. You're our first, I believe, right? And so at Anne Arundel Medical Center, and she's now at Hagerstown, Maryland, and she's going to give you some of her experiences and some of the things that she thinks this program could be. So what we're going to do is we'll have a number of speakers. Some of them will have a couple of their associates or people who've completed their program or are in their program, and then at the end we'll try to have time for Q&A. So thank you. Brooke.
Good morning, thank you. I actually, as you're speaking, Dr. Richardson, think I want to change all of my slides, but we'll try to stick to the script here.
You do what you need to do, girl.
All right. So I'm here to talk to you about the experience we had at Anne Arundel Medical Center in Annapolis, Maryland. I have no financial relationships. So at Anne Arundel, AAMC is Anne Arundel Medical Center, not the other AAMC, so I apologize for the confusion. But we were a hospital with 425 licensed beds, about 1,100 on the medical staff, over 350 of those are employed, and see about 97,000 visits annually, so that's the size of the hospital. The surgery program in general is about 23,000 cases, and 4,000 of those are general surgery. This map just demonstrates that where Anne Arundel lives is on the coast of Maryland, sort of right on the Chesapeake Bay. We have several peripheral sites, but our program for TTP has been located specifically at the main hospital center. So in terms of our time in history and the future of healthcare delivery, which is really where our journey started with this program, is that Maryland is the only waiver state, and what that means for us is that we have global budgets in the hospital, so every case that you bring takes out of your global budget. It's not fee for service. Where each hospital is accountable on a per capita rate setting system, so our hospital in particular is assigned 44,000 lives in terms of people that live in zip codes around our hospital, and we're responsible for their health and their total cost of care on an annualized basis. The Anne Arundel itself is an independent hospital, so we are loosely affiliated with Hopkins, but we are not owned or run by a bigger system, and so trying to maintain that independence in this rate set system is a very complicated endeavor, and there are only a handful of hospitals in Maryland that sort of fit in this relatively large size that are not already taken over by a larger system. So these were the things that we are dealing with and trying to protect in terms of when we made the decision to take this fellowship. We started 6 years ago on the service that I was running, the surgical hospitalist service, and the goal by our chairman, Dr. Adrian Park, was to become an acute care surgery service and to grow what we did from sort of a, you know, take what comes lazy, if you will, end of career hospitalist program and turn it into something that was thought leadership, that was doing intense cases, that was raising the acuity of the hospital, and that was really serving the mission of this population health process, creating equity within the hospital. And the reason that this is important is as we began to think about how are we going to make ourselves better, thought leadership, research, writing, and teaching all became part of what we wanted to do to complete our mission. And certainly, to be fair, we needed to raise our acuity, which we thought bringing learners that came from bigger institutions more recently, a lot of the people in my service were 20, 30 years out already. We also thought that having an additional body on our service would be helpful so that we would be able to extend our services to a certain point, and not certainly, obviously, you know, as someone just to take our call, but as an extension of the care that we were giving at the time. We were not a GME program, although at this point we do have a general surgery residency. And the last one, standardization, just a point that we were six independent general surgeons practicing surgery independently and just trading the service every 24 hours. And we knew that we needed to become a standardized style of care for patient satisfaction, quality outcomes, et cetera. And so part of this was to lead us on our journey of standardization. as I said, we started a residency freestanding for general surgery, and that started in 2017, so we are now in our third application cycle, three residents annually, and I'll say something later, but it has complicated our mastery in general surgery fellowship journey a little bit. But the hospital's planning on adding medicine OBGYN, so we're really evolving the way that we think about trainees, the way that we think about ourselves and how we practice. So the philosophy behind our program and what we were trying to do is to not only keep people in general surgery, but really to drive home the point that even if you choose a, and I hate the way that even came out of my mouth, when you choose a community program, not even if, when you choose a community program, you are still a lifelong learner and a lifelong educator. The opportunities to teach are throughout your surgical career, and I think that a lot of the narrative, especially within the 80 hours, especially within this, you haven't seen what I've seen, you don't know what I know, you'll never be able to catch up, that a lot of us feel in residency, that type of narrative suggests that when you go into a community program that you stop learning, that you just sort of go off and drift somewhere that is less relevant than some of the ivory towers. And we felt very committed to the fact that maintaining a rural general surgery presence, maintaining a community general surgery presence is part of our commitment to the future of our careers and of our profession. So we know that we were already teaching PA students, we were teaching NP students, we had some medical students that drifted through every once in a while, but really actively engaging and teaching our peers was something that we wanted to be able to do. Specifically because of the waiver state, we're in a complex kind of medical care delivery model. So offering opportunities for the business programs, for the leadership certificates, for the organized state medical society activities, legislative, lobbying, those kinds of things were all opportunities that we specifically offer and try to encourage, although I'll admit that that hasn't been as readily accepted by our fellows as we were hoping, but it's something that we actively engaged in and we're trying to offer to the fellows. And then for our own needs for our team, but certainly for the future needs of the surgeons that we are training, this understanding of the patient experience, how the customer matters, how the patient's perspective matters, was something that we felt that you really don't get in training at any large level, and so really trying to help broaden that perspective and what that means to really get off to a great start in your career was the thought. So we've had three graduates. In 2015, we tried to match someone and it didn't, it fell through at the last minute. In 2016, Dr. Summer Alami, who just got her FACS this week, she did mastery and then went to an employed rural practice. In 2017, Dr. Michael Tran, who actually had matched already in MIS, but basically fell with a gap year, so he decided to do the transition to practice as an opportunity to refine some of his skills, do some more independent work, but really spend a year waiting for his fellowship. And then our third one was just this year, Dr. Lola Onayemi, and she is transitioning now into an employed community practice. So we've had a little bit of a varied experience, and I'll say that our three fellows were fairly different in the way that they approached the process. In terms of growing pains for our institution, redefining the purpose and defining the purpose, so this question of whether or not this is remediation or whether or not this is something that is a positive. And again, our hospital was going through a transition from where we had no real formal training programs to a formal GME program. So we dealt with issues in credentialing, and my experience having been asked to talk to other hospitals about how would you start this program, this, if you're not already doing training, this question of how does the credentialing work, are they fully credentialed, are they partially credentialed, where does it live? It gets really kind of complicated in some systems, and I'm not actually clear if that is a real complication or if it's a perceived complication in terms of the credentialing, but it certainly is a roadblock. So our first 2 years, we were in a normal credentialing process as a physician, and now it all lives in GME and is all part of that process. The mentoring piece, we really had to flesh out. We really had to actually create a program and an understanding of what mentorship meant. It's not something that just happens automatically, as we've all experienced, and sort of moving forward and having really good language and really good understanding of how that worked was important. And then building the relationships and the trust. So certainly our ability to get our fellows independent has enhanced and increased over the years. So the first year there was a lot of kind of oversight and seeing, because we had to convince the operating room and our fellow surgeons that this was a good idea, that this was not remediation, that this was something that they were capable of doing, and in any other setting they'd already be practicing. And this was even better because you actually had somebody who was accountable to following through if they got themselves into trouble. So our setup is that we do 6 months on the acute care surgery service. They do wound clinic, and I'll say that I added the wound clinic specifically because I think that the opportunity to see other people's complications, rapid fire, to be able to heal those and be able to know what to do with those, especially if you go into a rural training program, is a really valuable tool. It also gave them some more long-term follow-up that we weren't getting in the ACS clinic side. They did night coverage, and I put 4 to 8, which, so they're in their 6 months of electives, which is sort of squarely in the middle. They do the first 3 months are with us, the last 3 months are with ACS, and these middle months they do some overnight shifts, so totally independent, taking care of the hospital. And then the last 3 months they are basically a partner. They're completely independent, call us if you need us, whereas the first 3 months there is a little bit more sort of two docs in house. They run the service, but there's always somebody right at their elbow if necessary. Our elective piece has been everything from rural, which we offer repeatedly, so it's a private practice, one surgeon with his nurse doing the care in the community. He's been there for 30 years, so he has a really strong working relationship with his patients and with the community. There's always a GI rotation, and predominantly hospital-based, which interesting in terms of unintended consequences, it really developed our relationship with our referrals of the GI program because we got to understand a little bit better how they tick. So our endoscopies, our ERCPs, those things went a little bit more smoothly once we realized sort of where their trigger points were. So actually we really benefited from that, but the fellow enjoyed it as well. And then surgeonc tends to be the other rotation that they go to. We have had gynonc, we've had somebody go just do deliveries because they thought they'd be somewhere very rural and need to be able to do C-sections and those kinds of things, and urology rotation as well for the anticipating doing international rotations. But in our particular setting, access to the pancreas in some of these bigger cases would happen on surgeonc. So the unintended consequences of our journey has been, and I like this sort of concept, that in times of seismic change, taking a community hospital, making it a teaching hospital, taking a fee-for-service and turning it into global budget, not everybody makes the journey. So we've had a lot of things happen that we really weren't expecting by trying this experiment. Number one is in trying to develop a program for new graduates, we developed ourselves. So we created a professional development pathway in our hospital and in our program such that some of the more senior surgeons decided it was time to retire. And we hired double boards to convert to our ACS model that have critical care and trauma. So they take call at shock because we're not a trauma center. And they are now living 0.3 of their FTE in the ICU. So they're spending month on, month off. Our physician's assistant felt some level of loss of relevance having a fellow around. And so she started doing professional development. She's now the president of the PA Society of Maryland and has taken a job that's more independent in a hospital that has voting privileges for PA. So she's leading the physician's assistant movement in Maryland now. And myself, in the last 3 weeks, I've started a new job as chief medical officer of Meritus Health in Hagerstown, a 250-bed level 3 trauma hospital, trying to show that we as physicians deserve and belong in the leadership roles, and that professional development is part of the piece of what we need to do and continue to do in these ever-changing times, but also that you can run a hospital and take care of truly the culture of medicine. So I'm in the credentialing process. I'll continue taking call at this hospital, but moving forward and leading community and rural hospitals into thought leadership and teaching is really where I want to spend the rest of my career. The other pieces that we did in our hospital is we created a professional development leadership newsletter that has articles available online to our physicians. We have a physician's leadership certificate through the State Medical Society that some of our docs are doing. We've really pushed interdepartmental collaboration and standardization. So there's now a collaborative that isn't about graphs and dashboards. It's about physicians sitting around the table talking about the care of these complex patients in a multidisciplinary way. These things may be going on at your hospitals already, but they weren't going on at ours. And it all came out of the questions that our transition to practice fellows asked us and pushing ourselves to try to explain what it is that we do and why we do it to someone who is brand new out of training. Like, what is going on here? So it pushed all of us to be better. So in 2018-19, we chose not to match a fellow, not because we were completing our program, but because we're reorganizing and standardizing. By adding GME on top of this, it kind of added a whole nother level of questions. And instead of us just pushing through, which we did over this last year, and I think Dr. Oniemi felt a lot of the growing pains. She was very patient with us, but I think that we needed a year to really just reorganize ourselves. We really wanted to enhance the learner experience and learn how to have residents and junior attendings together. And watching the junior attending or the fellow train the residents in the light of you're actually responsible for these patients instead of a truly, you know, controlled fellowship situation has been interesting in a growth curve as well. And then we are just strengthening our mission for mastery, the lifetime educators, really training our colleagues in terms of the real importance of doing this work. And that's all I have. Thank you.